This is Ed Mazur, chairman of the City Club of Chicago. Our speakers today were Dr. Janice Jackson, the chief education officer of the Chicago Public Schools, and Forrest Claypool, who heads up the Chicago Public School System. They said that they've stabilized the public school education system in Chicago and are now providing world-class education. The two talked about 650 public schools in Chicago, 375,000 students, and they were proud to say that the five-year graduation rate has increased by 4 percentage points from 73.5% to 77.5%. The national grade is at 83%, and they hope to achieve that rate within the next couple of years. The five-year African-American graduation rate that had been at 57% is now projected to be 62.87%, and they have a goal by 2019 of an 85% graduation rate in 5 years. In 1987, then Secretary of Education William Bennett described Chicago's public school system as the worst in the United States. Both Claypool and Janice Jackson boasted that now Chicago is a model for all of the urban school systems in the United States. The system is performing better than ever. Both charter schools, neighborhood schools, schools of choice, more freshmen are on track to graduation. They point out that high school graduation is not the ultimate goal. The goal is admittance to college, university, vocational schools, or military training. They feel there are many world-class schools in the city of Chicago, and Chicago is going to be a model from pre-K through college for all of the United States and its public school systems. By 2019, they hope that every graduate of a Chicago high school will have a letter of acceptance from colleges, university, a vocational school, or military. And then they talked about the fact that they're at peace with the Chicago Teachers Union right now. They're working in concert. And that there will be no projected budget shortfalls this year, so we can look forward to a complete school year, the maintenance of teachers and supplies to teachers.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mayor Rahm Emanuel. Mayor?
Thank you, Jay. We are also joined, besides Frank Clark as chair of the board, by Jaime Guzman. And I thank Jaime also for being here as the vice chair of the board of the Chicago Public Schools. This is a significant day and an inflection point for the Chicago Public Schools for a number of reasons. First and foremost, 30 years ago this year, Secretary of Education William Bennett called Chicago Public Schools the worst in the nation. Now, I would like to get him a one-way ticket if he get through TSA to come to Chicago. You laugh. Some of us have to go through TSA. You know what that I'm talking about. But on a serious note, because 30 years ago marks all of our work collectively of making a series of changes around 20 years ago is when the state legislature, 1995, decided to give mayoral control for the public schools and accountability and put a zip code and an address and a place of responsibility to start taking some ownership and start making some changes so we could take that scarlet letter off the city. And all the way through that process, while I do believe it's been accelerated of recent, but all the way through that process, we as a city have made a set of fundamental changes where now the school system and our children, more importantly, whether it's graduation rate, math scores, reading scores, attainment at national level or exceeding them, or going to college, at every measure you look at, Chicago Public School students, our children, are setting national standards and leading the country of all urban school systems. And when Janice and Forrest comes up to you, I really do want you not just to look at this, as my mother and father used to do when we would come home. We would. This is true. This is why I used to say, my mother, I used to say to her, you love Zeke more than you love me. She goes, no, I hate you all equally. That's what it takes to grow up with a Jewish mother. But we would walk into our house And when you walk into the house, you'd walk in the kitchen, there was the side of the refrigerator, and our report card was up on the refrigerator, all three boys, until the next report card, which is why I wanted to strangle Zeke my entire life. But I don't want you to just take this report card and look at it here. I want you to take it to your office. I want you to take it to your home. And I want you to put to memory these data points, that because behind these data points are kids' lives who are different today because of what's happening in the classrooms across the city of Chicago. And we should all be proud of what this shows, not where it is, but the measure of the progress and where we're going. And fundamentally, at core, Forrest and Janice both said, I'm not allowed to talk about a single data point, so I'm going to try to go through the entire speech without one data point. But most importantly, we are making a fundamental change in this direction. Every other school system in the country is a kindergarten through 12th grade model. Chicago's going to a pre-K to college model, and that's where the future of this country is, and that's where the future of our children are going to go. School systems, cities, philanthropic community used to be responsible. Kindergarten, 12th grade. We went to a universal full-day kindergarten for every child, not to half. We've increased pre-K by full-day pre-K by 70%. You will look at the graduation rate. You will see not only the graduation rate, the college attendance. We are the first school system in the country that if you get a B average, community college is free. No other city has it, and more importantly, or equally in value, which I'm very proud of, it is open to dreamers, the only city in the United States. It documents a high school degree may have been great in the 20th century. All the jobs of the future, at a minimum, are going to require something post-high school. And building on the Chicago Star Scholarship, not only did I say that you get a B average, community college is free. If you keep the B average in community college, every university in the city of Chicago offers you 25 to 40% off of tuition. No other city provides it. You can go to college in the city of Chicago for a year of cost. And that, for a middle-class family, working family, poor family, is the difference between keeping their head above water or having their head permanently underwater. And not only that, starting in 2019, every child we're going to ensure has the support they have, so by the time they graduate, they have either a letter from college, community college, armed forces, or a trade school. Our kids do not grow up without expectations of what they're going to do post-high school. These are our children. No child should graduate high school in the city of Chicago that doesn't have a post-high school education, because in the 21st century, you're going to earn what you learn. And we want to ensure all our children, not some children, not some children by zip code, by address, by income, or by family structure, have that expectation. And the one thing I've learned as mayor in the city of Chicago, if you set expectations for our kids, they will exceed them. That is, do not take a bet on the Chicago children against them, because you're going to be on the short end and you're going to owe some money. They will always surprise you on the upside. And the great news for us as a city, because of this inflection point we are at today, both Forrest and Janice, whether it's at the CTA, the Park District, whether it's at Al Raby, South Shore, or Westinghouse, they have never, ever taken on a responsibility in public service and not left both the institution and the people that rely on it better off. We are fortunate not only for all the gains that have been made of recent, we're fortunate we have two people committed to stabilizing the school system, and most importantly for our parents, our teachers, our students, and our principals, that they are now able to focus solely on what we hired them originally to do, was to take like these young men who are here at Urban Prep, make sure they're not only getting a world-class education, they're getting an education that raises their expectations, and they are prepared and have the educational foundation and support to both meet and exceed those expectations and go on to further education. I am so proud of what Forrest and Janice have done to not only this point, but to create the stability and the foundation for us to take these metrics and, like our kids, not just meet them, but exceed them. Forrest and Janice.
Thank you, Mayor, for that kind introduction. I did want to acknowledge one other person, Jesse Ruiz, here to my left, who was a vice president of the board for many years and also CEO. Thank you for being here, Jesse. And my colleague Janice Jackson and I would like to take a few minutes, as the mayor indicated, to talk about the state of the Chicago Public Schools, and then we'd be happy to take some questions. So the mayor stole a little bit of my material, but I will repeat it. Let me begin with a history lesson, and that history lesson is that the modern era, as the mayor indicated, the modern era of Chicago school reform began in 1987, because that is when Ronald Reagan's Education Secretary Bill Bennett famously came to town and declared Chicago schools the worst in the nation. It was a real slap in the face to the city of Chicago, but it was hard to argue with. The district had endured 9 teacher strikes in 17 years, including a punishing 19-day strike just a few weeks before Secretary Bennett's visit. Performance was abysmal, with half of high schools scoring in the bottom on a national college placement exam. Dropout rates were reportedly at 43%. And the middle class had taken flight to the suburbs, leaving behind a low-income, segregated student population. In the last 20 years, and especially in a remarkable acceleration of gains in the past 6 years under Mayor Emanuel, the Chicago Public Schools has undergone more change than any other local agency of government, and perhaps more than any school system in America. We've empowered principals and reduced bureaucracy. We've introduced charters and other types of choice into the system. We've sharpened the focus on teacher training and teacher quality. We've added more rigor to our high schools with advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs. We've used student data in new and sophisticated ways to track student progress and intervene before young people drop out. We brought more and more accountability into the system, replacing schools that were not working with schools that are. Today, we're piloting new ideas like personalized learning and reforming how we support special education students and hold schools accountable for their success. Through a number of leadership changes over the years, the progress has never stopped. And today, by almost any measure, the system is performing better than ever. Janice will share some of these academic achievements with you, but I want to talk about the larger context surrounding our schools. All of this positive change, remarkably, has taken place in a difficult and challenging political environment where education funding has been the problem that everyone talked about but nobody solved. Year after year, we struggled in a state that has never met its responsibility to properly fund schools and ties our hands when it comes to meeting our own needs. Unlike better funded school systems that have greater certainty with upcoming budgets in February and March, our principals could not begin hiring teachers for the next year. Chicago schools were often uncertain about how much money they had until the school year began. As a result, our principals couldn't hire the top teacher candidates or keep the ones they already had, and they couldn't plan their year ahead. Everything was up in the air, including funding gaps, economic layoffs, and mid-year cuts. Nearly 2 years ago, I stood in the same room and talked about the need for equal funding for our students. Chicago students make up 20% of the state's enrollment, and we are getting just 15% of state funding. The difference, $500 million a year. Many were skeptical that we would achieve equality, but we stand here today on much stronger financial footing than we did just weeks ago. This era of extreme financial uncertainty is behind us. With 2 years of management reforms and cost-cutting combined with a new state law that finally puts us on a path to fair funding. It's not a complete solution, and we're not out of the woods. But we will not furlough employees this year. We will not lay off teachers for economic reasons. We will not have the uncertainty that we've had in years past. And if Springfield does what it's supposed to do and steadily boosts education funding in the coming years, Chicago will eventually achieve rough parity with other parts of the state in the funding of its schools. That doesn't mean we can quit our diet, so to speak, and allow the bureaucracy to grow again. And it doesn't mean that our pension challenges are solved. but it does mean that we are doing better and can continue to invest in our classrooms. My larger hope is that public confidence in public education is restored and that our school system can fulfill its destiny as an engine of growth and innovation for our city, and that the remarkable urban transformation that is taking place in Chicago public schools can finally receive the attention that it deserves. As Karen Chenoweth of the Education Trust recently said, quote, "If as a nation we are serious about wanting to improve our schools, we should be studying how Chicago has made such progress." Let that sink in a minute and compare it to Bill Bennett's words in 1987. If we as a nation are serious about wanting to improve our schools, we should be studying how Chicago has made such progress. Every year, hundreds of thousands of children show up on the first day of school to begin a journey that will take them to a new place. This week, I had the opportunity to visit with those children and their families at Solario, Good, Joplin, Sumner, Wildwood, Lovett, and other schools. I saw the eager faces of our students and the enthusiasm of teachers and principals for the new school year. At Solario, the mayor and I spoke to the dreamers, the young people brought to this country by parents who immigrated illegally, but who have known no other home. They are among the brightest and most dedicated students who, if left unmolested by the cruel and self-destructive policies of the Trump administration, will be major contributors to our society. At Good, I met with Principal Rodriguez, who has lifted the school to one-plus status with, among many other things, a partnership with IBM. STEM stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. Dozens of students take apprenticeship opportunities at IBM, and IBM provides resources and technical assistance to the school. At Scott Joplin Elementary, I saw a charismatic principal, Ms. Aline Mason, whose Level 1 school is attracting dozens of children from outside the neighborhood. And at Sumner, I saw a 100-year-old building in desperate need of repairs in impoverished North Lawndale. But inside that ancient building, I saw modern classrooms with motivated children under the leadership of Principal Fatima Cook, who has achieved one-plus recognition for her school. And yesterday, I saw two schools with strong, dynamic principals leading the district in personalized learning from very different neighborhoods with great similar results. Wildwood and Principal Mary Beth Kinnott and Chicago, on Chicago's far northwest side, and Lovett Elementary, led by Principal Levis Haney in his school at Lovett. And earlier this year, I met with Aaron Kitson, a devoted student counselor at Lakeview High School. She proudly brought some of her graduating seniors in from summer vacation to meet with me on a cold, rainy morning, and each of them she had helped secure a college scholarship. Each was uniquely inspirational, from the immigrant girl whose parents tried unsuccessfully to stop her from going to college, to a boy from a foster home who won a scholarship to the University of Michigan. None of these children carried the types of advantages that so many of our children do. They were lifted by a rising school, a rising neighborhood school, with many people like Aaron who care deeply about their futures. For those students, their prospects are growing brighter every day. Increasingly, for some, the journey leads to college and a successful career. For others, the journey takes them to the workforce after high school. For some, the journey leads down the wrong path, but each year we're getting better, much better, at identifying and protecting our most at-risk children. And the results speak for themselves. The University of Illinois just released a study showing that our students are outperforming similar students across the state, no matter what subcategory and demographics you look at, whether it be low income, African American, Latino, white. We're beating the rest of Illinois in every subgroup. And the rest of the country has taken notice. A Stanford education researcher named Sean Reardon has looked at data all across the country using multiple tests, and has concluded that Chicago now has the biggest gains of any big city school system in America. He will be presenting his findings at a forum here in Chicago on November the 2nd, along with researchers from UIC and the Chicago Consortium on School Research. Interestingly, while the data is very clear, Many have questions about how we achieve this progress, which is why two local foundations, Joyce and Spencer, are sponsoring the forum. Several theories are out there. The school choice advocates think that choice is a factor. And in fact, a new study affirms that some of our charter schools are producing positive outcomes long after students graduate from high school. And as choice expands throughout the system, parents are more empowered than ever, and schools are under pressure to improve in order to attract students. I know some people think schools should not face that kind of pressure. I disagree. We're all under pressure, and without an incentive to get better, big bureaucracies tend to stand still. Pretty soon they convince themselves the status quo is just fine, when it isn't. In fact, we need to continue not just competitive pressure, but a greater sense of accountability. We know from experience and research, including yesterday's feature-length piece in the New York Times about the failure of Michigan's Anything Goes charter experiment, that charter choice by itself is not enough. Choice in public schools must be accompanied by accountability. Last year, President Clark and the Board of Education followed established policies and law to close several poorly performing charter schools. These schools had abysmal student attainment statistics and had languished repeatedly at the bottom of CPS rankings, failing their children year after year. And yet, inexplicably, the Illinois Charter Commission reversed the CPS board's decisions, despite an acknowledgement by the board that the schools did not meet the commission's own academic standards. The commission also ignored the fact that CPS guaranteed a seat at a higher performing school for each and every one of the students in these failing charter schools. If the charter movement is going to succeed and continue to help elevate the quality of CPS schools, then we must be given the authority to close objectively bad schools without interference by politics or the whims and caprices of bureaucrats in faraway Springfield. Those of us who have been battling bureaucracies for decades believe that we have successfully empowered our principals and put more of the decision-making power at the school level where it belongs. There are no great schools without great principals, making the day-to-day decisions that impact the lives of students and creating the learning environments where students and teachers can thrive. We've also done a great job in developing our teachers, thanks to the support of partners like the Chicago Public Education Fund. Today, Chicago has more national board-certified teachers than any other school system in America. The skeptics look at changing demographics and attribute our progress to the fact that some of our lower-income students have left the system, although the percentage of low-income kids in the system has remained consistently in the mid-80s for years. The November forum will be an opportunity to explore all of these theories and build a research agenda that will begin to answer some of the questions and help us better understand what we are doing right and what we can do better. In the meantime, we have 650 schools to run and 375,000 students to educate. I am deeply honored to have the opportunity to lead this work and blessed to have the energetic and effective support of our mayor, who has focused, even from his first day in office, like a laser on student academic growth, and who has fought the long game to win much-needed resources in Springfield. I'm also grateful to have, as a great partner, Chief Education Officer Janice Jackson. Janice usually lights up a room when she walks in. But when I was at Lovett School on the west side yesterday, the principal told me how he'd informed his elementary school students that Janice Jackson would be visiting. They were very excited. But later, they were somewhat disappointed when Janice Jackson walked in the door, not Janet Jackson. Dr. Janice Jackson came up through the system as a student, as a teacher, as a principal, and now as an administrator. Thanks to her leadership, there's always a strong voice in the room who understands how our policies play out in the classroom and at the school level. She knows the numbers, and so she knows the story, and also knows what it will take to get where we need to go from here. So I'd like to introduce our Chief Education Officer to come up and give you a little more details. Janice Jackson.
Yeah.
Step over, everybody. Thanks, Forrest. Thank you, Forrest. Luckily, I was a teacher, so I've heard every Janice Jackson or Janet Jackson joke you can think of, but nice to add another one to the repertoire. First, I want to start by thanking Forrest for providing high-level context for this talk today, but more importantly, I want to thank him for his leadership. I can honestly say, as a person that has been in Chicago Public Schools my entire life, that this district is not the same district that it was 20, 30 years ago. And it's because of his leadership that we're on firmer ground. So let's give Forrest a big round of applause. As Forrest mentioned, and the mayor, there have been many, many indicators of progress for Chicago Public Schools. And I have to tell you that I experienced this when speaking with both the media, the average citizen, that people are still in a state of disbelief. And I want to frame this conversation today, the latter part of this conversation, by acknowledging that. Believe it's a state of disbelief, not only because the narrative around Chicago Public Schools has been so negative for so long, but also because, depending on where you sit, you are either witnessing history or making history, because Chicago Public Schools is really at a critical turning point. We have to look at our schools not through the lens of the media or the daily news cycle, but through the lens of a student who did not imagine him or herself being a college student, who's now sitting in a dormitory at a Big Ten school, one of our lovely state schools, or even an Ivy League school here in this country. You have to look at our thriving schools of all types. No longer are we a district with a handful of great high schools. You have to understand what innovative principals and teachers are doing every day to, you know, do more with less, to blend technology with traditional teaching skills, and to do all of that while at the same time being more sensitive to the social and emotional needs of our students and the students that we serve. Or you can look at the reasons that account for a reduction in our suspension rate. We are down 67% over time, and that is because a new generation of educators are not taking a punitive approach to educating and supporting our students, but they're taking a more sensitive approach and paying attention to social-emotional needs and using restorative justice practices in order to better manage classrooms and better equip students to do their very best. But let's look at the numbers. Because the numbers, these facts are not debatable, and people who know me know that I love a good debate. I hope I'm in the room with people who still put a high premium on facts, because that is exactly what I want to talk about today. It starts with our youngest students. As the mayor mentioned in his introduction, we are creating, and we are serious about creating, a pre-K through college continuum here in this city. I like to share my experience. I started in CPS. You know, a lot of people say that in the room, but I started in Head Start. Like many low-income families, Head Start was a way for me to gain access to school early on. So when I went to kindergarten, I went to kindergarten already a reader and ready to learn. Every student should have that opportunity, not just middle-class students, not just students who are lucky enough to get in a Head Start program, which is why the mayor expanded full-day and pre-K programming throughout the city. It should be no surprise that last year we saw a 46% reduction in the number of students needing to attend summer school. It was the exact same cohort of students who started in that pre-K expansion pipeline. We should also look at our test scores, and Forrest and the mayor and these lovely charts outline that. But year after year, 5 years in a row, we see consistent gains where 3 out of 5 children in Chicago are reading or beating national averages in reading. More than half are beating or exceeding national averages in math. This is critically important because, as the mayor has always quoted, students start dropping out of high school in third grade. So we use that third grade as a benchmark, a signpost to see how our students are doing. And I'm happy to report that on every single metric, we continue to see them reach higher and higher rates. But we have to talk about high schools. And many people know that high schools, I spent my entire career teaching and leading in high school. So that's a passion that I have. And that's, you know, that's where my love is. We have done remarkable work at the district level through partnerships, namely with the Consortium on Chicago School Research. I remember being an educator and a practitioner and seeing those reports. And although some of the findings were not pleasant, they really pushed the district to change its practice. And there are very few examples of both research and practice meshing and leading to greater outcomes for students. So let's talk about some of those outcomes. Freshmen on track numbers are in the high 90s. This is critically important because 10 years ago when we started tracking this metric, we were in the 50s, which had a strong correlation to the graduation rate at that time. So I feel very confident that the numbers, when we look at our freshmen on track rate and we see it close to 90%, that we will be closing in very quickly on the national graduation rate pretty soon. Let's also look at another area that we've paid a lot of attention to in Chicago public schools, which is this notion of early college. Again, this is something that for many people in this room, this is just our experience. Of course, we had AP classes. Of course, we visited colleges. Some of us were lucky enough to take Saturday classes or other classes at the university in high school. That was not the norm in Chicago public schools before our focus on early college. We set an ambitious goal of having 50% of our students graduate with an early college credential. So that means students have either taken and passed an AP course, a career and technical education course, an IB course, or some other course at one of our local junior colleges or city colleges or universities where they could earn dual credit and be dually enrolled in college while still in high school. Yesterday, we announced that 43% of our students earned that upon graduation, I should say, and I feel very confident that we're going to meet that 50% goal and shatter that goal as our kids continue to do on every single metric. But the rate that we're most proud of is the graduation rate for students in Chicago. CPS has increased its graduation rate by 25 points over the past 5 years. When you compare that to the national rate has improved, and many people like to call that out, but they've improved by 10 percentage points. This brings our rate to 77.5%, an all-time high. But the thing that I'm most proud of, and I say this as an educator and as an African-American leader, that it is largely driven by performance of African-American boys who are doing much better. They improved by 5 percentage points, higher than the overall gain for the district, and I'm really proud of that fact. Again, our students continue to exceed and shatter rates. We are chasing all of the national rates. We're not going to rest on our laurels. We're very proud of this. But our goal is to become a model district in this country and have people come to look and see what we're doing. The research community has already called on them to do that. Forrest pointed out in his speech that Professor Sean Reardon, UIC, U of C, and so many others have pointed to Chicago Public Schools as an outlier in a positive way. And we're doing all of this while increasing standards. So we can't explain this away by a demographic shift or by a lowering of expectations. We have increased standards by making computer science mandatory for all, by requiring more rigorous science requirements, requiring a lab science 9th through 11th grade for all of our students, which, again, every student in a college prep school experiences. And we're doing all of this so that our students are better prepared when they go off to college. So planning for the future is critically important. If you look at our college enrollment numbers, we're at 42%, according to the University of Chicago. That's almost matching the national average of 44%. And this is an incredible feat because we know that the demographics of Chicago public schools do not mirror the national demographics. Our students are doing this because they're doing better academically, but they're also doing it because they are graduating with more and more financial resources in order to be successful. This week, we announced that our students secured $1.2 billion in scholarship funds, which is a remarkable accomplishment. This is an important accomplishment because it's not just about ACT or SAT scores or GPA. If students do not have the financial resources, they will not be able to realize their dreams of college completion. This is an underexplored metric, and I want to call it out because the reason we're earning so many dollars up from $266 million just 5 years ago is because more and more low-income students are not only graduating but going off to college, and they are the students who both qualify based on need and merit for these scholarships. What does this all mean? According to one estimate, we've graduated an additional 50,000 young people in the last decade. And we've also sent an additional 25,000 students to college. The lifetime economic impact of these young people is estimated at about $30 billion, according to some economists. Whether you believe that number or not really isn't important. What is important is that we're changing lives for the better every single day. And there are important stories, stories that I think all of us need to know. Stories like a student named Jennifer, who just recently graduated from Crane Medical Prep. Jennifer is a remarkable student. She grew up on the southeast side of Chicago and, like many, sought something better outside of her community. She was crushed when she didn't get in a selective enrollment school. She enrolled in a new restart school, Crane Medical Prep. And like many of her peers who attend those elite schools here in Chicago and across the country, she's now sitting in a classroom in Dartmouth College. Or what about students like Abby Sola, Andrea, and Faith? These, you might recall, are the three young ladies who graduated from Lindblom in Englewood who are going to Harvard, MIT, and Stanford. They reminded us that those stories, students from low-income backgrounds going off to college, it's more common than the stories that you read about our kids in the newspaper committing acts of violence or being victims of violence. We should be reminded of that. Lastly, we opened last week with the principals, and we had a former student come. Her name is Daniela Fernandez. Daniela immigrated to the United States from Colombia at an early age, was lucky enough to attend some of the finest schools in the city, Ravenswood Elementary and Lincoln Park. She went on to Georgetown. Now she's writing policy at the national level. This is a Chicago public school student who took advantage of our dual language programs, our bilingual education programs, our early college programs, IB programs, all the things that you hear us talking about. These are the students that are out there making a difference. And again, I remind you that these stories are more common than they are outliers. But the credit for all of this, I get to do speeches like this, Forrest and I get to be in front of the camera, but the credit for all of this rests squarely on the shoulders of our principals and teachers. They work hard every day setting high expectations. They have an incredible job to do. They're the ones obviously doing the heavy lifting. They're the ones greeting kids every day. They're the ones looking in their eyes, seeing if they're ready to learn, or providing extra things that they may need to help them deal with some of the violence that they may experience coming to and from school or hear about, some of the family issues that many of our students face, or just some of the daily struggles that I know oftentimes as a principal, I wonder, how did they even get up every day? But there are some heroic principals out there that you should know about, and I hate to name names, but there are just a few that I want to call out. First, if we look at with Patrick Ferdinand, who is the principal of Phoenix Military Academy. Our military academies are not talked about enough. Chicago is the only city that has one service academy for every single branch of the services. And despite the term military, many of the students, almost all in fact, go off to college or some post-secondary placement upon graduation. WIP has high expectations. He instills discipline in his students. But the thing that he does the best is that he instills this notion of leadership, the leader in you. And I think that that's critically important. We have so many other schools that are thriving and that are taking us, again, away from this narrative of just having a handful of schools. We want to replicate and have 10 Kenwoods, 10 Tafts, 10 Amundsens, 10 Lakeviews, because we know that the strength of a community is built around a neighborhood school. These folks do extremely difficult work every day under extraordinary conditions. I'm often surprised at what our principals are able to do despite some of the things that they had to face this year. But just as Forrest said, we have tackled some very tough political and financial challenges, and I believe that we are beginning this year, and this is going to be our best year yet. With that said, we still have a lot of work to do. One of the things that I'd like to talk about this year is pay more attention to this year, I should say, is the high teacher turnover rate in a district. And I was reading an article this morning that just talked about what it means to be a teacher in general. One of the biggest factors that either deter people from going into the field of education or staying is that the job is so difficult. Educating students, in particular in low-income areas where there are so many challenges and fewer resources, is a very difficult job. And the constant uncertainty definitely took its toll on a lot of our teachers. But with that said, we have to pay more attention to teacher retention in our district because CPS does some of the best training, and we have to stop training teachers and principals for other school districts. So this year, we're committed to making that better, and we will work harder to attract high-quality teachers, diversify our teaching pool, but more importantly, keep them here in our district. We also want to pay more attention to equity as a whole. We will not continue to break records if we do not pay attention to subgroups, if we do not continue to narrow the achievement gap. And while I highlighted some bright lights like the African-American male graduation rate, we saw English language learners improve reading rates at 48%, math at 28% last year, which is pretty remarkable. But if we don't continue to see that across every single subgroup, our district will not continue to progress at the rate that we have over the past 5 years. We also want to replicate what we've done with the high school to college transition and do that at eighth grade. So we're really excited about starting a common application process called GoCPS. It makes it easier for parents to negotiate the system, and once again, it helps with equity because we all know, and I know this as a former selective enrollment principal, there are some parents who know how to navigate the system, and there are many who do not. And because we're going to make things more transparent and for the first time have district schools, charter schools, selective enrollment schools all in one place, we believe that this level of transparency will continue to transform what's happening in our schools. I believe firmly that our district thrives on choice. A lot of people debate that. And I say that as a person who grew up in a low-income family. That should not be something reserved for the middle class. We have seen choice lead to greater competition in our schools, a greater degree of accountability, and we look forward to continuing to do what we know works. Speaking of that, we want to continue to expand AP and IB programs in our schools. The data is clear. There's a body of research that shows that students who are exposed to AP and IB programs early are able to not only get into college, but to persist in college. So this year, we're creating something called the Equal Opportunity Schools, where we have identified six schools with predominantly African-American students in them, and we're going to focus on improving access to AP programming, but more importantly, the success rate. There will be tons and tons of other investments that we want to make for programming that we know really is moving the needle. But when you put all of this together, many people ask, how do we get here? We got here, I think the recipe is pretty simple, but it's not founded yet. We are inviting the research community to come and look at what we're doing in Chicago public schools, not only so we can help explain it to the broader community, but more importantly, so we can replicate it throughout the country. We know that a few things that we've done have helped move the needle, most notably our focus on principals. Principal leadership really does matter. We know that choice plays a big role in this. More importantly, we know that we have one of the strongest post-secondary ecosystems here in Chicago. This is a place where the philanthropic community, the school district, and everybody has come together to put resources in place. And having post-secondary completion as a North Star has really propelled this district. For those of us who are worried about CPS or thinking about the future, I just leave you with a few things. For all the drama that we had last year, and a reporter asked the other day, will we be free of drama? I think that, you know, you need a little drama to keep things going. But I think we need to be reminded where Forrest started in his speech. 30 years ago, we've had 30 years of reform in Chicago public schools, 30 years of change, 30 years of hope. But we are on firmer ground. We have peace with our union. I think our teachers are in a better place to go in and do their best work. Principals are in a better place without a cloud of uncertainty hanging over their heads. Today, we are stronger and more determined than ever. And thanks to the leadership of the mayor and to Forrest, our board in the state of Illinois, who, in my opinion, finally did the right thing and stepped up, we're going to have a great school year. We cannot do this work without you. I thank you for coming out this morning to listen to the state of Chicago Public Schools. I ask for your support as we continue to make Chicago Public Schools one of the premier schools in the nation. Thank you.
Well, thank you both, Forrest Claypool and Janice Jackson, and we have time for a few questions. Latrice, thank you. Okay, and the two of you can decide who wants to handle them. Give the easy ones. Okay, this is from Roosevelt University trustee Charlie Gardner, city club member sitting off here to the right. Didn't the final school funding compromise give CPS most of what it needed? If so, why did it take so long to get it? Who would like to? Forrest, excellent.
Well, that's a difficult one. It does go back decades, this school funding problem, and I think the balkanization of the state has been a factor. Distrust between regions historically has made it difficult to put the political coalition together to do what was right for schools, because in the past the view was that if somebody wins, somebody else loses. It's a zero-sum game. And I think the genius of what Senator Menar from Bunker Hill did and Representative Davis did in this bill that was just passed is say that no school is going to lose. You start off and say every school is going to gain a little. Nobody's going to lose anything. But that going forward, the new money that comes into the system will go first and foremost to schools that serve the poorest children, based on an evidence-based model that says we know from research that there's a minimum amount of money per pupil that you really need, even in the best-managed schools, to give those children an adequate education. And so the schools that are furthest from that target will get the money first. And I think that's a breakthrough approach that really hadn't been – in the past it was either we're going to take from – Robin Hood, we're going to take from some schools and give to others, or it was we're going to pass a massive, massive tax increase and just put a bunch of money into the schools right away. So this says not only we're not going to have Robin Hood, but that we're going to do this a little bit gradually. Now, we'd all prefer that it be done all at once. This does not take us to equality, to what our student enrollment is, but over time we will get there. And I think, politics is the art of the possible. And the fact that this happened with Speaker Madigan, with Senate President Cullerton, and Governor Bruce Rauner in office at the same time really is remarkable, and it's something to be – it's something really to be cherished.
Okay, thank you. It's a real short one. From Maureen Kelleher with Education Post. Are we safe from mid-year budget shortfalls?
Yes.
He said it already.
Okay. You notice the chair tries to alternate long answers with short answers. Okay. This is from Paul Schaveis, who's affiliated with Ingenuity. He's not a member of the City Club, but Paul, $50. We expect you to join. Your Sun-Times editorial this morning examined 10 key successes at CPS. Hang on. Arguably, there is an 11th. In the past 3 years alone, there has been a 134% increase in CPS schools rated strong or excelling in the arts. On average, 97% of CPS students now have access to the arts. Can you talk about why this is important, and your vision for the arts in schools? See, not what you thought it was.
Good. No, as soon as you said Paul, I thought about that. But, Paul, we do have it on the district scorecard, which we're so happy. This is our second annual release, and the arts play a critical role. One of the things that I think is sometimes stated that's absolutely not true is that CPS has not been committed to the arts. And through our partnership with Ingenuity, in the support of the philanthropic community, and, of course, with the mayor's push around the importance of arts in our schools, we have seen a dramatic increase. But what's most notable about that, and we noticed this when we started this joint work, is it's not just about giving students an outlet and a place to be creative and to express themselves. We see there's strong data that suggests and that shows that students who are exposed to the arts actually do better in their academic courses. And so we've made a lot of policy changes, as well as the commitments that I talked about earlier as a district, making art one of the core courses for Chicago Public Schools. So again, we continue to look forward to the expansion of that. And what makes me so proud is that we're getting to a place where you no longer go in one school and kind of take for granted that every single art is represented, art form is represented, and go into other schools where that it's either non-existent or limited. As he stated in his introduction, 97% of our schools have a high-quality arts program, and we're just looking forward to strengthening that and also sustaining that. And I think with additional funding, you know, we're on firmer ground and in a better position to do that.
Absolutely. I just want to add one thing. Without Ingenuity, which is an extraordinary organization that has partnered with CPS to provide funding, particularly during the very difficult times, yeah, recently, we could not have sustained these art education programs, and they deserve an enormous amount of credit. And in fact, and my communications director here can verify this because I called her yesterday after the Tribune, ran an editorial, a wonderful editorial, applauding Chance the Rapper for his support for funding the arts, which we are very grateful for. But I said, remind the Tribune editorial board that there's another organization in town, Ingenuity, that for many years has been doing this in extraordinarily generous levels, led by people like my friend Steve Crown and other business leaders, who go out there and raise the money to do this. And so that is unsung. They're unsung heroes in this arts education process.
Okay. Interesting that you should mention Chance, whose father, Ken Bennett, is a strong supporter of City Club. Thank you very much. This is from Von Steuben High School graduate Graham Grady, sitting over here. Please elaborate on the programs that have been funded by Chance, the $2 million for 20 CPS schools.
A few things. One, I think that, you know, again, Chance has been a remarkable friend to Chicago Public Schools. I am amazed that somebody at that point in his year, at that point in his career, and to be only 23 or 24 years old, to be paying this much attention to you know, his civic responsibilities is pretty remarkable. I add that because he was very hands-on in the process and had a very clear criteria for selecting the 20 schools. He looked at schools that experienced dramatic cuts last year, some schools that were facing declining enrollment, thinking that bringing in strong arts programs would support those schools and help those principals recruit, but also schools that had little to no art programming in the schools. So what he allowed for is a grant over 3 years, which is critically important so that it's not kind of a one-time deal. And principals themselves were allowed to put together their wish list. So we have examples of schools that are creating studios for students to come in and make music. We have examples of people who've bought equipment so that they can do filmmaking and video making. People are doing traditional arts programs. And then some people are actually using it for their reading, their English language arts classes, and their math classes. So it really runs the gamut. But the thing that's critically important is that we identified schools that were high-need schools, but also allowed for principal autonomy, which we think is critically important, to put together the type of programming that they think would help improve their school, but also attract more and more students back to their schools.
Okay, thank you very much, Janice. So this is from City Club member Chicago parent, you chicken. The new universal enrollment system defaults to the closest high school. Why not have the default be to the highest performing nearby school with room?
So a couple things. I'm really proud of where we are with regard to the implementation of GoCPS from a policy standpoint. Many of you who have followed this knows that CPS had quite a few false starts around this. And mainly it was because we could not really reconcile some of the debates and competing ideas around enrollment. And one of those would be around boundaries and, you know, entitlement boundaries in our neighborhood schools. What I feel is critically important is that we do not want to create a system that impacts our neighborhood schools. Chicago is a community of neighborhoods, and the neighborhood school is critically important, and I would hate to create anything that takes away from that. We believe that the neighborhood school should not be a default school. It should be a school of choice, which is why we are encouraging students to select their neighborhood school and rank order it with their 2020 selections. But we looked at what other districts have done, and one of the things that we saw is that if you only use proximity to assign schools or to prioritize schools, that you will promote or perpetuate, in our case, more segregation. So we start with the neighborhood school, but we have focused not only on equity, but much more on high school exploration. So it's not just about proximity, not just about SQRP. Students have to really look at the best match and fit. Again, replicating the great work that we've done from the 12th grade to the college transition.
Thank you, Dr. Jackson. This is from Luis Narvaez, who's with the CPS.
Yeah.
You know him, huh?
I know him.
Okay. Well, we'll see if you want to handle his question. Thank you for your advocacy on behalf of our city's Dreamers. How do you think the Illinois Dreamers Bill of Rights, advocated by Mayor Emanuel, will affect the district's Dreamer population?
So I think, you know, the mayor has been clear that he supports Dreamers, immigrants, and other people here in this city. You know, we have a lawsuit for our sanctuary city status. He's been very clear about the policies. Chicago Public Schools was the first school district to say that we won't allow ICE agents into our schools. I think for a lot of our students, the news that came this week was crushing. I know it was crushing for me, although not directly impacted by it. But what I think we need to do is to continue to advocate on behalf of Dreamers, to really put pressure on Congress and other elected officials who have an opportunity to really right this wrong. We have a large population of Dreamers here in the state of Illinois, and I can tell you as a school principal, time and time again, I was in a position where students did not even know that they were undocumented, and they had done everything that had been asked of them. They had worked extremely hard, bought into the American dream, and to be told that that is somehow being taken away for something that is not, that you had nothing to do with. These are, we're talking about children that were brought here as babies, I think is a shame. And so the mayor has been very clear about his support for DACA and some kind of resolution. Chicago Public Schools stands in the same place. And so we're, again, this is another place where we're calling on more advocacy from people in this room, because it's not just going to be the mayor who's going to make those decisions. We really have to put pressure on our elected officials to make the decisions if we really believe this is important legislation.
Yeah. I would invite Attorney General Sessions to Chicago to come and visit and see what Dreamer students really are, like the ones that the mayor and I spoke to this week, to see, the look at them in the eyes and see what great Americans they are and what great potential they have, instead of the stereotypes and the hateful false rhetoric that he spewed yesterday as President Trump's surrogate, who did not even have the guts to stand up and publicly talk about his own policy and rescission. Come to Chicago. See our students. They're the future.
And by the way, should the Attorney General take Forrest up on his request, we will provide the public forum for that. That's what the City Club's all about. This is from Grace Rink, who's a City Club member, Quirkus Consulting. Unless I butchered Quirkus, I apologize. Most homes are within 1 mile of 3 to 5 schools. Would you consider a shared boundary system instead of school-specific attendance areas? This would accommodate demographic changes and reduce new construction costs.
I think boundaries are a part of Chicago's history. I looked at Forrest because we have this debate all the time, and it's so much tied to it. I don't have to tell people in this room. But, you know, the issue is this. In some neighborhoods, the boundary and where you live becomes critically important because there are schools that are highly sought after. You know, people move there. Real estate costs go up. So many other things are tied to that. And then we have other areas where there are, you know, more than enough seats in an entitlement, in an attendance boundary. So it really varies across the city, and it's largely aligned to school quality. What we currently have now is a system of choice. So students are entitled to go to their school based on their entitlement boundary. However, if there are seats available, the principal does have the discretion to allow people to enroll. The problem is, in many of those schools, the schools that I think the person who wrote this question is thinking about, many of those schools are at capacity. We count that as a good problem here in the district. I know we talked about Wildwood, visited Canty. I mean, there are schools in certain neighborhoods that are shutting down any other educational institution in the community because they're doing so well and because they are high-quality public institutions. But when we think about the future for Chicago public schools, we don't want to be limited by boundaries. I think the best way to solve that problem is to improve the number of quality seats in the district. And so a lot of the things that you will see us announcing look to do that. The other thing that's important to note is that we're looking to create high quality, high care, diverse schools, because that's what every parent wants. And so there's a lot of work to be done there, but the debate around boundaries is one that's been around longer than I've been alive, but something that I know Forrest and I are looking to tackle because we spend a lot of time talking about it. I don't know if you want to add.
Okay, we have time for one last question, and then we'll have our drawing. This is from Randall Blakely, who's with the LaSalle Street Church. It's a very interesting question. Do you know or can you measure how many parents, teachers, or students have actually utilized the tools and strategies on the CPS website to facilitate conversations on violence and race in places like Charlottesville?
Well, we just posted those resources, and school has only been in session for a few weeks, but we can definitely get the number of hits. But I can tell you, typically when we put out a response to a major event. We did something with the Baltimore riots or, you know, a while back with the Freddie Gray incident, Charlottesville. We get thousands of hits, and our teachers are really appreciative of that. The other thing that's important to note, when we posted information about Charlottesville, we actually got a few nasty comments on Facebook about the role of talking about race and violence and things like that in the classroom. And I was so proud that a student from Westinghouse College Prep, I didn't have anything to do with that, but I'm still taking credit, wrote a really long, and I encourage you to go online and read it, an eloquent response that explains what it's like as an African American and how it really is. The school is the safest place to be. It's the safest place to learn. And if our students are not learning about these things and having an open dialogue and discourse around what we know they experience every day, we're not doing a good job equipping them to be a part of this community. So it's not just about test scores. It's not just about, you know, drops in suspension rates. We are educating people who we want to be full participants in society. And as a minority, I can tell you a big part of that is being able to navigate and have those difficult conversations. So I don't have the exact numbers, Pastor Blakey, but I can tell you that when we post, teachers are extremely appreciative, and we see thousands of teachers going online to download those materials.
Okay, well, let's give a big round of applause to our speakers, Forrest Claypool, Dr. Jackson.